Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is our News and Q show. We're going to talk all the Star Wars news, take some audience questions, Jedi Temple Challenge, and lots of big possible Star Wars news, and for sure Star Wars news this weekend.
Yeah, for sure, and not for sure, but we want, there's a lot of things coming your way from us here on the Superstar Destroyer of our fleet. We always want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook or a piece of content we think you should try out on us. Joseph, did I spoil it there? Joseph, do you have any life or Star Wars adventures that the world needs to know?
No, just now I really, really want to do some piece of art called A Piece of Content, like maybe an artsy indie film called A Piece of Content. Yeah, I'll work on writing it and you will star in it. I picture you on a cliffside overlooking the ocean, and then the title card comes up, Ken Napsok in Joseph Scrimshaw's A Piece of Content.
A Burbank Film Festival entrant.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Life adventures. Life is kind of is full of lots of adventures lately. I had to go to Target. Like, it was one of those kind of situations where, like, my wife and I absolutely need some supplies right now. I would not choose to go to Target because I'm trying to be very careful about when I do go out. But I was all masked up, had to do it. The kind of the last time I was out in the world before everything locked down, I was also at a Target. So this was kind of this is a little bookends for me. But it was great. I had to be there anyway. So, of course, I was going to go to the toy section.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see. There was this big sign, end cap sign at Target of Empire Strikes Back 40th anniversary. And oh, it gave me goosebumps. I got so excited. And then it was truly like reliving my childhood. There were signs for toys, but there weren't really any toys. It was, instead of Sad Lobot, it was just a bunch of probe droids, which, hey, Black Series probe droid, awesome. Too big for my, physically, literally too large for my collection. I got to be real careful about what I buy before I run out of space and, you know, just get crushed under an avalanche of Star Wars awesome toys. But it was really, it was cool to be out in the world for just a minute. And it was cool to just even see that sign, even though there weren't many toys to go along with it.
The hope of toys yet to come.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my Star Wars adventure. You know, it's a weird time for toys, I think, in general. Even, I think, having nothing to do with the virus, it's just a real transitional time in toys where it seems like a ton of the market is really just collectibles that you're buying online, and things aren't really making it to the shelves much. And if they are, they get picked clean quickly.
Hmm. Hmm. So true. I remember one of my last trips to Target. It's been a couple months, though. Went in and everyone was racing towards the essentials. And I did go to the toy aisle because, you know what, that's part of my mental health and that's essential too.
Exactly. Exactly. So how about you? What kind of life or Star Wars adventures do you have this week?
Man, busy week talking about content, working all last week, which is fun, man. I just keep reminding myself when it gets stressful or I get down, you know, we can get down, you know, numbers and your place in it all and all those kind of things. And that's all folly. That's just folly. We every week talk about Star Wars. I get to talk about Game of Thrones and now baseball and all these things. It's like 14-year-old me is like, what a dream. What a dream. So I love that perspective. In terms of Star Wars, I got to say, Grace, my wonderful partner in crime, she has been, I'll just say, addicted to TikTok lately. And I don't know if you know, Joseph, there's an entire Kylo Ren TikTok world.
I didn't know that. I truly did not know that.
I, no joke, probably heard 300 of these videos. I don't watch them. I hear them over my shoulder. So she is a Star Wars fan, as everyone knows who listens to the show. She's a Star Wars fan very much on her own. And it was just like, Kylo's like her favorite character for reasons. The reasons are varied. and she was like, I kind of need a watch. So Star Wars is, well, you know, I'm not going to ever fight you on that. So we put aside our Ghost Adventures binge watching that we always do. And she was like, what do we watch? Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker. We end up settling on a Rise of Skywalker. And, you know, I always have these reminders and I say it. And I think those listening to Force Center can maybe, I don't know, either you already believe it, so you don't need me to keep saying it. But also it's nice to hear for any newer listeners. We're fans, man. Joseph, you and I are fans. And we love doing this. And there I am watching Rise of Skywalker. And the first maybe 15 minutes movie, I was checking some stuff, looking at Big Bear rental prices on Zillow, you know, all these things. And looking up, right? Win the war. Okay, I look up, you know, Claude, oh, I look up. Then all about 15, 20 minutes, I you know, I put the phone, I'm just now engaged. And here it is three times on the movie. Eyes moist, tears crying. I've never had that with any Star Wars film and all the problems that movie has. And I understand there's some problems and there's some things that maybe I like, you don't, or some things that I go, yeah, you're right. But I still enjoy it. I've never had this with any Star Wars film. It still gets me. I really love it. I'm here to celebrate The Rise of Skywalker proudly. And those are the moments that remind me that this movie got me and I'm plugged into it. And so that was a fun Star Wars adventure.
That's a great Star Wars adventure, and I think a great way to describe our feelings about Rise of Skywalker. I'm definitely, for me, like I sometimes describe movies or TV shows I really love like a family member. You know, they almost feel more human when they have flaws, and whatever flaws Rise of Skywalker might have, and I got a couple of minor issues for myself, from kind of, I guess, major issues, but anyway, point being, I feel about that movie like a loved one. Of yeah, I get it, you know, you have some flaws, but you, what you communicate to me is just love and kindness and empathy, and it moves me.
Yeah, I still describe that movie to people as a tremendously powerful spiritual journey of a movie. And it's got a lot of flashbang, whiz bang, loud noises, great sound design. Grace just loved, she kept just every sound design moment was like, oh, the sound design of this is so great.
That Exegol lightning is one of the best sounds in all of Star Wars.
The shot of Palpatine firing up that lightning the ships is just, it gets me every time. And all that stuff. But beneath it all, it to me is perhaps one of the more spiritual Star Wars movies. And Last Jedi, it moved me on other levels too. But that was, they're not comparing them, but it's like this one just gets me in a different way. And so kudos to them. And yeah, I agree with that. I agree with what you're saying. But that's all the movies, you know. It's like, you know, you and I have been watching a lot of prequels, watching a lot of Attack of the Clones, and that's always my, quote, lowest ranked Star Wars film, right? Whatever that means. Now getting so much choice. You and I have been rewatching the Clone Wars, and the next one up is the movie. That's the next episode you and I got.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, but we'll talk about it on Friday when we release that episode. I have never had this much enjoyment of that silly movie that I could write essays on why I don't think it should exist. Right. You know, at least back then, I never had more fun watching that movie.
Yeah.
Anyways, Star Wars.
Breaking. We like Star Wars here on the 1,000th episode of our podcast.
And I always, sorry, this is almost like a rant, but I over the last couple of years, it just got tired of hearing, oh, well, you're just a positive Star Wars fan. Oh, yeah, I wish I could have your passion for Star Wars. No, man, it's just, I like this. I just like this. I saw it at 7, fell in love with it. And like any kind of love, sometimes you don't talk for a while, the communication's bad, and there's moments you get upset. But at the end of the day, at the end of the night, this is the thing you want with you.
Yeah.
That's how I view it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I had one of those great moments this morning when I was getting ready for our recording. I was getting, you know, kind of stressed about everything that I have to do and getting the notes ready and all that. And then I fell behind because I wanted to make sure I had some extra details correct about the Tusken Raiders and fell down a Wikipedia hole. Going, I didn't know it was called the Mushroom Mesa. Interesting. Where did that come from? Like, and just like totally disappearing into my love of this thing.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of love, man, we got some love coming here. We got a lot of good, juicy news stories. The Force Center word of the month, juicy, juicy, juicy. And let's start the news here, Joseph. You know, but we're free falling on this one a little bit. Usually we have some notes, some write-ups. We just have one little sentence with an exclamation point in our notes this week that says Lando rumors. Let's go in. This kind of popped up last week. It is for the most point a one source story, and we here at Force Center, what do we say, Joseph? We're just trying to check StarWars.com for official news.
Yeah, I think so. And that's what's happened a lot is, you know, different things have news has broken with a few sources or a lot of sources. And for me, I sort of rate how likely I feel based on how many sources it has. But even with all of that, I personally don't take anything confirmed. I don't take anything as being, you know, announced until it is announced by the people involved. And that's partially just for me wanting to protect my own little Star Wars soul of I don't want to assume something's going to happen until it's really, truly, deeply, officially announced. Because even when rumors are accurate, things change in Hollywood all the time. And I also just kind of feel like it is good practice for being a citizen of the world to really double check, like where is the information coming from? You know, how many sources have independently confirmed it versus the way the internet works right now, where things can, you know, a telephone game can happen even when the information is good, even when there's one source and that source is probably right. There can still be like this level of responsibility where it can start with one source with reliable information And then 10 articles later, you're into this telephone game of so-and-so says, and you got to go through 8 links before you get down to where did this come from? So I just always like to be mindful of that, which is why, we're calling this a rumor, probably a good rumor, makes a lot of sense rumor, but still, to me, not announced until Lucasfilm or Donald Glover says it.
Yeah, and choosing what quote-unquote rumor-based stories we talk about here in Force Center, I don't know if there's a hard, fast set rule for us. It's just when we kind of look at it, get a sense of, number one, yeah, this might be true. Let's talk about it. But two, hey, this might be true, and that's fun. Let's talk about the possibilities is always where we approach this from. So this idea that Donald Glover will be returning for a Disney Plus-based series of Lando Calrissian, I don't know, one season, two season, short seasons, many seasons. Those are the kind of things we wouldn't know right now and don't know. But there's also supplemental rumors based on rumors built on rumors that could all be fact that, hey, this could also involve Billy Dee Williams and maybe it's a bookend. He's telling a story. It's the Calrissian Chronicles, which quite frankly just sounds really fun to me. I like that idea. Reminds me of Young Indiana Jones Chronicles as well. So that's kind of the headline, Joseph. Let's dive in. What do you think about this? Not so much the chances, but what this could be.
Yeah. Well, I guess the last thing I would want to say about the chances is, I think this does seem like a good chance to me because whatever kind of contract everybody involved with Solo had, it was for more movies. So, I don't know all the business of that, if that can translate into television. But when you look at it that way of like, well, Donald Glover might have already had some kind of contract. And oh, by the way, he is one of the most popular and successful actor, writers, directors around right now. So, of course, Disney Plus would want him if they could get him. So for me, there's that, like, this is not a wild theory, right?
No, I wouldn't call this a wild theory at all. I think, and it's funny. Like, I don't know why in my head, same with Emilia Clarke and Alden Ehrenreich. We talked a lot about Alden last week, about this idea of, would they do it? Like, would they forget the contract? Would they be interested? And I don't know, because of my perception of their status, Emilia Clarke, right? She's one of the bigger TV stars in the world. And she wouldn't want to do this. Alden Ehrenreich, he's an actor who does not want to be involved with this anymore. Oh, maybe not. Maybe that's not true. And then Donald Glover loves Lando. We heard the stories, getting a pizza and watching Empire Strikes Back when he was cast and brought his energy to it. And it's like, oh, he's got so much going on. Would he want to do it? I don't know why this is a Ken thing. I don't know why I think he wouldn't want to do it. I guess that's a mindset I'd have to change. I don't know him. I haven't spoken with him.
Yeah. I think there's something about hearing a television show and kind of thinking of that as, regular, traditional broadcast. Or was that 22 episodes, an hour long? It's, how months and months and months of shooting versus maybe a shorter one shot television, limited series kind of thing. It's maybe timing wise, it just makes it a little bit more attractive than traditional television.
Absolutely.
So then for what it could be, I love the Calrissian Chronicles. Billy Dee Williams would be great, but that Calrissian Chronicles, that is just a really fresh, interesting approach, but also really fits with Star Wars. We've talked a lot about how Star Wars feels like it is a little bit of a story that is being told to you with the starting with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, 3PO and R2 being sort of floated by Lucas in early days, is that you're kind of hearing the story through them and unreliable narrators. So there's all this kind of juicy Star Wars history in the idea of Lando sitting there and telling you a story about Lando. But for what that story is, I got really excited about what's different about Lando from Han. And I feel like there's this great thread in the Lando storytelling we have of like, yeah, he's a scoundrel. Yeah, he's a smuggler. Yeah, he's an adventurer. But what makes him different? And to me, it always seems like because Lando likes the finer things, I think likes a little bit more order, a little less chaos, that he's always trying to settle down. Like, not necessarily not have an adventure, but just have a thing that's going to pay off so he can drink and party and be around the finer things. Like, even when we meet him in Solo, he has claimed he's retired. And then circumstances change. He's not retired anymore. That's where we meet him in Empire. He's managed to lock down a thing that keeps the money flowing. So I would love a story of basically like Lando trying to land a business, really, and that allows him to have the finer things, or, you know, get to some planet and get himself appointed royalty and just be able to have the finer things. But that keeps falling apart. Like that seems really interesting to me, like Lando trying to be a businessman and having it taken away from him, like sort of almost like Sims with action and violence. Like, I'm just trying to make this. I'm trying to get out of the game. I got this sweet kind of con going on where I get to have the fine things and I'm surrounded by luxury, but it keeps falling apart and the blaster has to keep coming out. That would be a really interesting Lando story to me.
I love that. It's almost a little bit of, I wasn't even supposed to be here today type of that attitude. I love that you started this thought here of what is different between Lando and Han, particularly around this time. I have no thoughts either way of, do I want this before Solo or after Solo? And quite frankly, don't care right now where it is, because I think it'd be the same either way. He is fully formed in a way when we meet him in Solo. Kira, like you just said, the reputation precedes him in many areas of his life, shall we say. I'm fascinated by the fact that when we meet him, he's like, I'm kind of done with all. I'm ready to retire, ready to change. You know, that's pretty interesting to me. So he brings a different perspective to the galaxy because of his taste, because of his adventures. We've seen some of them. We got a Lando comic based around the younger version. God, yeah, right before Solo came out or a little bit after. We got the stuff in Rebels with the puffer pigs and everything, which is more closer to the Lando we know. And I'm thinking, too, one of my favorite little pieces is the From a Certain Point of View story of him watching the holos of the Falcon and going, that's got to be Han. What makes Han care about all this? That's interesting to me. So you could get a different perspective of the galaxy, because it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joseph, even in a troubled, dangerous, oppressed galaxy, he is enjoying things going on. He has found his way in this galaxy. And then when that is challenged, how does that Lando get to the Lando at the end of Empire, but in the middle of Empire? Just, you know, I'm just a businessman trying to, you know, leave me alone until he joins up, right? What makes him join up? That's a long journey. But to see that pop up earlier of looking around and going, the things don't look good, but I'm making out all right. So I'm trying to settle down, and I don't care about the big picture, but what starts pulling him in, you know, what starts cracking his soul?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. And I think you could see that he, you know, he does have empathy. I think part of what breaks him to join the rebellion is, you know, he feels bad about betraying Han, but I also get this sense of just, he cared about Cloud City. That was his city. That's now, you know, he tried to get all those citizens out, and now they're trapped there and under that. I mean, there's this straightforward, just like, hey, I ran from the Empire as long as I could, and wherever I went, it found me, and I can't run anymore. But you do get that sense of empathy, similar to Han, and that would be a cool thing to build a little bit.
Yeah, to build from there, one of my first Star Wars books that I read outside of the novelizations of the original trilogy were those Lando adventure books. I didn't read the Han ones a little bit later, but the Lando ones I read confused the hell out of me as like an 8-year-old. I was like, where's 3PO? And I don't know, that might have been my aversion kind of started, either EU or just stuff that, where I have to like kind of be like, okay, Luke's not in this one. Okay. I think that's where maybe comes from. But what this could mean is you can go anywhere in the galaxy, and you can go upper crust, lower crust, middle crust. Lando fits into all of it and fits into all of it well. This could be perhaps the sexiest Star Wars story on screen. You know, you could play around with some of those kind of tropes and things going on, and things we know about Lando. You could really dive into that. So the potentials are endless. And I would love, I got to say this carefully, because I've been a fan of Donald Glover. I mean, Community back in the day, all this kind of, even before when he used to write for 30 Rock, I just kind of knew of this guy. He's just uber talented, without a doubt. But I, you know, at times I thought he didn't get as much to, I don't know. His performance of Lando was fine to me at times, great in at moments, fine overall. But to as a performer, to get to dive into that and really feel as though this is the Lando-led show versus, you know, I'm here to serve the story of Han Solo, I would love to see him sink his teeth into that and figure out what he could do.
That is a great point, too. And him being an accomplished, not just actor, but, you know, writer, director, creator, to see how much input he will get into saying, like, hey, yeah, we've had these tip of the iceberg elements of Lando. Here's the one I really want to pursue. And here's the one I really want to sink my teeth in. And in fact, I want to show you this side of Lando you've never seen before that makes perfect sense, but you haven't seen it before. And knowing that, he like you're saying, he's not there as a part of Han Solo's story. It's absolutely his story. How much more fleshed out Lando could be is really exciting.
Yeah, and because this is the Solo verse, so to speak, Joseph, we talked a lot about what Alden said recently. You and I are very much on the board of we'd love Kira to lead a story and have her journey, maybe leading Crimson Dawn or taking out some characters there. And then we both love Enfys Nest and think there's storytelling potential there. There's that era. This is that era that we think's ripe for stories. Does this being a Lando series, do you still think this could lead to some of those connections? It would be weird to me. I don't know. I mean, you'd have to explain if him and Han meet up again. Does it count? Because I don't know if between Solo and Empire, that's the only time they've seen each other. I don't know the canon. I don't even particularly care for the canon answer right now. I just have my own kind of head version of that. I think there was one other meeting or at least one other incident, but I don't know. I'm not holding to that. So anyways, do you think the Soloverse could pop up in this kind of show?
Yeah, I think some element of the Soloverse could definitely pop up. For my headcanon, I want Han and Lando to have run into each other many, many times and had, I think they're on a roller coaster. They've had times where they're buddies, where they're totally in sync, and they've had times where they've fallen out. And I like right now not knowing which incident is the one that they're talking about in Empire. You know, it definitely could be Solo, but it could be other things as well. So for that, yeah, I'm real torn because I want more of Enfys Nest. I want more of Kira. I'm excited that there could be a Han Solo Disney Plus series. I'm excited there could be a Lando series, but there's something a little bit about Enfys and Kira that in some ways I want their story to be their story. I don't want them. They're interesting enough to me and vital enough to me that I don't want them to be a cog in somebody else's story. Mm-hmm. You know, if it is a story of Lando is trying to carve out some nice piece of living that he can just enjoy the moment, enjoy the now, retire, but he gets caught up in some rebellion he doesn't really want to be a part of, and that's Enfys' rebellion. And if it feels like a little bit like the Lando and Enfys show, then I'd be okay with that. But I don't want either of them to be a subplot.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, would I take an episode, an appearance, a cameo? Sure, I'm going to take anything I can get. But yes, yeah. There's just so much more with Enfys' character that I think we could learn and enjoy, and definitely with Akira too. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm excited for all the Soloverse. If they just announced, like, actually, this is what we're doing a Soloverse, and it's all going to come together. We're totally doing a, you know, Netflix is Marvel that builds up. You know, that one I liked individual series. The Defenders team up, not great. So I'm not comparing that, but. Mm-hmm. If it was like, yeah, we're doing a Han show, a Lando show, a Kira show, an Enfys Nest, and then there's going to be this, you know, fifth series where they all meet up. Like, I'd be all for that because they all get to shine. They all get to come together.
Solo Avengers. No. yeah, yeah. And look, I'll be honest. I after I saw some of the initial reports and rumors going around, I didn't click on a lot of them. So I don't know right now what could be confirmed, what's not confirmed. And again, we'll wait to see it all. Because the other factor, Joseph, let's talk about it. Great. This is announced officially the moment after we release this episode, which is often what happens. Still not going to be shooting this for a while.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing to temper my excitement with all of these announcements with things that are absolutely confirmed, like Kenobi, Cassian, whatever Leslie Headland is doing, is my excitement is tempered by the fact of they're not going to get moving until we can actually, you know, defeat the virus enough to get live filming going. Otherwise, I'm looking forward to all 87 seasons of The Bad Batch.
Yeah, right. at the only thing. So yeah, we will have more on this. We joke, but I'm sure some other rumor will pop up, some other story. And we also appreciate your understanding of us kind of trying to explain how we're approaching some of these stories and our views here. We enjoy good Star Wars content and Star Wars. We go, ooh, don't mind if I do, when we see a tantalizing headline as well. But we also want to make sure we're getting the right and proper information out there.
Yeah.
It's best we say. Well, we got some other news stories here. We're not done. There you go. That one was just our little breaking news one, so to speak, and it went a bit here. We'll run through these ones here. Inside the High Republic Part 2, go to StarWars.com if you want to learn more about two Jedi Knights. One we kind of already had heard about. One is brand new to us. We've got a Skeer. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Skeer, a Trandoshan Jedi, gruff, opinionated, been around the block, has a secret. Avar Chris, human female Jedi, previously revealed to a point, but now we know more. Wise, compassionate, and revealed as the previously mentioned hero of Hetzal. And then we also got in this kind of batch of information. You click on a second story. Was Michael Siglin, I think his name was, revealed some stuff. There's power players, Joseph. We got power players, and it's the Santecas.
Yeah. Ooh,
look at this. Marlin and Velis, hyperspace prospecting dynasty. The Santecas will be showing up. Larry Hagman, not theirs yet. That's right. I made a Dallas and Dynasty reference. I apologize. But here's the thing about the Santecas, Joseph. Are you ready?
Yeah.
They also have a secret.
Okay, so I'm just going to be very, very clear on this. We have confirmation of three characters. We have the Santeca family. We have Skeer and Avar Chris. And two out of the three have a secret.
Secrets. Yes, and there's a little bit of other High Republic-related information coming in the next story here, but this is the main stuff here. So, all right. Trandoshan Jedi, man. I didn't think I'd be down for that. Like, I mean, I'd take any Jedi. I like Opal Wren's sisters, for Christ's sake, but like, you know, you don't think about it. And then I saw it and I was like, well, that looks pretty good. I like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm thrilled. I think this is one of the things going back to, I remember sitting in a specific bar with a specific friend in the early spring of 99, guessing what kind of Jedi we might see. And I think we probably reviewed, like, do you think Trandoshan? Could there be a Trandoshan Jedi in the Phantom Menace? For me, that's always been one of the fun things of knowing, like, Jedi are of all species, and just because we've met a species before in a certain context doesn't mean like that everyone is of the, you know, exact same culture. So I go back a long way with that kind of excitement of seeing different kinds of Jedi, and Skeer makes me really excited.
A great point on that, because I don't know, maybe it's just you grow up with Bosk and the figure and everything, and even in Mando, but you got a lot of bounty hunters, right? I don't know. You can absolutely fall into the trap of pigeonholing some of these alien species in Star Wars into one particular thing. Now, again, Jawas, Ugnaughts, you know, will we see a Jawa Jedi? I don't know. Maybe an Ugnaught Jedi. I'd be down for that now after seeing Quill. But, you know, it's just kind of that thing. It's like, you know, the whole planet's a forest. The whole planet's a city. Star Wars can do that. So it is a good benefit of this era to be like, oh, cool. Yeah, Trandoshan Jedi. All are welcome in the Jedi Order.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the Clone Wars really did double down on at least a part of Trandoshan culture being very much, you know, this lineages of hunters. So that'll be great to see if they lean into that and say, like, well, there are other cultures within Trandoshan culture, or if Skeer is really, that's what's fascinating about him, is he is bucking the cultural trends of the Trandoshans.
Maybe that's a secret. He was he's a big game hunter on the weekend. I don't know. Avar Chris is also going to have something to do with this inciting incident, the one we're kind of, you know, we read that excerpt of from Kevin Scott's book.
Charles Sewell, I think.
Charles Sewell's the first one out. Right. Gotcha. So she'll have something to do with that. And then I like this. I like that we already have a history within this show. I was going to say show in this series. It's about history. I love that. So that we got, she is a hero of Hetzal. I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by that, partially because I have a friend named Hetzel, so I keep seeing that and say, Hero of Dan Hetzel. No, Hero of Hetzel. Hero of Hetzel.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, great point about, like, I want, even though this takes place 200 years before Phantom Menace, I still do want that sense of history, that sense of the contrast between the old and the new in Star Wars, which really makes Star Wars sing to me. Yeah, so how in this Jedi, she's sort of being described as is a pretty, like, good traditional Jedi, a wise mm-hmm. and compassionate and powerful. So how will it affect her to be a legend, which is, you know, already kind of known as a hero, which in theory is something that would be a byproduct of being a Jedi, but not something a Jedi like her would crave. So that makes me interested to see if they're going to dive into that kind of contrast of, you know, adventure, excitement, being labeled the Hero of Hetzal. A Jedi craves not these things, you know?
Right. Does that start to turn her? Look, the Santec, we love Lor San Tech. There's a lot of potential for that character. This is clearly a family line here. What do you think about this pretty direct connection?
Oh, I love this. I love that they are prospecting, basically finding a hyperspace route started as just like, what? We are lowly prospectors. And then they hit upon something. That's, I'm a big history fan. Both my wife and I have worked at many different historical museums and buildings. And that's always the story of the family who becomes a dynasty. And there's almost always something really sketchy in that past where in order to hold on to that discovery, you have stepped on some necks and you have done some not great stuff. This is like, to me, this is very Deadwood. This is very, you know, robber barons. This is if you track down the founders of cities who successfully like defended a claim, you track down the people who built logging industry, who built railroad, and you will find some dynasties with some secrets.
Hadn't thought of it in those terms directly. You mentioned Deadwood and I'm immediately intrigued even more if we can turn it into that. Yeah. Boop, boop. I like that. I think that could be their secret. What's in the Santeca's past and how does that directly down the line? Doesn't it all 200 plus years later involve lore going, I don't want to be part of that anymore. I'm an adventurer, but I'm going to work with the Force. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. And it gives it this great frontier feeling because it, I think it is really taking from actual stories of frontier in the real world.
Well said. I continue to get more excited for the High Republic than I thought I was going to be, if that makes sense. I'm never, hey, yeah, I'm a positive Star Wars fan. No, I was just like, all right, this sounds great. This sounds fun. I'll read these books when they come out. But the world they're setting up already, the history drawn from the real world type stuff, real world stories and examples in our own histories, that's exciting. That's intriguing. I think they're doing a great job getting us ready for it.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Stoked is a good word, yes.
Another Trandoshan.
Stoked. We were skater kids in the 80s, right? Now, I did have some Town and Country shirts in junior high. I don't apologize. That's headline. Hey, you know, this would have been San Diego Comic-Con International if the world was a little bit different, but instead we got to enjoy it at home. That's the first question. I'll start right there, Joseph. Did you enjoy it at home? Because I did not.
I enjoyed looking at all of the photos that kept coming up in my various social media memories and other people posting photos. And I enjoyed that sense of community. I was also really interested to see how much the big companies would hold their fire if they would put out really huge announcements or just kind of check-ins. And I think, you know, for the most part, it was not as huge as Comic-Con normally is, and that felt appropriate to me. And this news is like all great stuff. There's some announcements in the stuff we're going to talk about in Star Wars, but not like huge, huge breaking news.
Yeah, it was good. And look, this makes me sound like a bad person, and I'm going to have to stand by Joseph. I don't go to Comic-Con for the panels. I go to Comic-Con to be hungover at 2 p.m. at a 7-Eleven. All right, hanging out with my friends, but working hard.
Who's been trying to get Wi-Fi in a toilet stall so I can get the breaking news that happened literally a block away from me at Comic-Con. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into Lucasfilm Publishing. They did have a panel and some cool little reveals. Again, nothing huge, but some good stuff. The Lightsaber Collection. This is a book. Looks like a great coffee table style book that looks at the evolution of the weapon and those that wield them. What profiles of those that use them. Great cover. Different blades, different hilts on the cover. Joseph, I know you like lightsabers. You built one. What do you think about this?
Smashing that buy button. This one I'm really excited by. There's really a lot going on in publishing, not just the straightforward novels and comic books, but so many books like this. And I really am getting to my like limit of how much time I have to read everything. But this one I will make time for because I do really love lightsabers and I like the approach this book looks like it's taken.
Yeah, I would not. This is one that doesn't immediately jump out to me for no big reason other than, I don't know, I'm looking at my coffee table space right now and we are running out and I got to choose. But this just looks like one that I can spend some time with and get some revelations and just kind of celebrate this weapon that is so associated with Star Wars. And I do have a lot of them sitting around. So even if I don't think I'm drawn to it, I think I'll be drawn to it and definitely be something I'm excited to add. Yeah. We got a couple more here. IDW comic titles are on the way. More from Tales from Vader's Castle. We got some Tales of Villainy, Tales of the Dark Side. As I think I've said before, but I'll be clear about it, I have not read any of the IDW comics. They are canon. Some of you are probably like, oh, but you got, I totally agree with you. I just, at some point when the Star Wars adventures from IDW started pouring out and onto the racks of my comic shop, I just had to make that choice of, I can't, a little overwhelmed right now. A ton of Marvel stuff coming out with the Star Wars line. I'm pulling those every week on my stack. I just have not gone down the IDW route. I have one or two, I think, that picked up based on either the content or the cover. I don't know about you, Joseph. I know you probably, I think you've been even a little less even on the Marvel ones too, as well, just because again, so much content, you can get overwhelmed. What do you think about these ones?
Oh yeah, I'm excited. The IDW comics, the only ones I've read is that the previous Vader's Castle series, which was really, really great, really enjoyable. Kevin Scott is one of my favorite Star Wars writers and I love Vader's Castle. So I did dive into that. I like the Marvel comics a lot and I've still been playing catch up since from when they relaunched in 2015 and trying to stay caught up. But the ones that looked, the Vader's Castle, those covers are great. They all look great. The ones they announced that are going to jump around in time and have different adventures and had some pictures of Rise of Skywalker era, Rey, Finn and Poe, like many other fans, I'm so hungry for those adventures. I might pick those up. And I get that they're Star Wars adventures for all ages. So I think they really are like, we're not trying to, you know, totally reveal this new side of this character. It's just a fun adventure they have. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of hungry for that for Rey, Finn and Poe of just like, yeah, show me a run they went on and they encountered something interesting and fun and just had a little adventure. I might make the time for that.
Good point. Good point. I'm tisking myself here.
No. We all have to make choices.
We do. Then we got The Art of Galaxy's Edge. Excuse me. The Art of Galaxy's Edge. Amy Ratcliffe kind of leading the charge on this one here. She's great. I don't have The Art of Fallen Order. I don't have The Art of Rebels yet. I love The Art of books. This is one, again, almost similar to the lightsaber one where I'm like, I don't know if I'll get that one. But then, you know, my one trip to Galaxy's Edge, I still think about often. So, and for various reasons, some days like, man, that ice cream treat was great. Or, wow, tears, because I just can't believe I experienced that. You know, it varies. So to see again how they came about this, I am fascinated. I love the Imagineering series on Disney Plus. Unapologetically, just love it. I get fascinated with the building of those worlds. So to see it get even more insight into that, because it's such just It's an accomplishment. I really do think Galaxy's Edge is. So I think now that I say it out loud, Joseph, I've talked myself into it.
Welcome to Ken and Joseph talk themselves into buying and reading even more Star Wars stuff here on Force Center. Yeah, no, I get where you're coming from, but I'm really curious to see how they approach this differently than a movie, because it is such a different design, but it is still being so in canon in it. The design of Galaxy's Edge, there's so much that went into why it works, but for me, part of what was so successful is just everywhere I looked, it felt genuinely like Star Wars, just aesthetically.
I can't wait to go back. Come on. Come on. And there was some news today, as we went to tape here, about holidays, Life Day, and although you could have some themed holidays at Galaxy's Edge. That's great. I personally am not comfortable to head back yet. Some people are. That's fine. I'll mask up and head out there. I'm looking forward to experiencing those Life Day celebration at Galaxy's Edge would probably be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
A couple quick notes here. We already knew about Justina Ireland's High Republic, A Test of Courage. And she revealed that a character in it, Avon Staros, does connect to Santa Staros. Santa Staros is a great character unveiled in the comics to much controversy. If you remember the heady light days of 2015, where she stepped down at the end of a comic in a panel and said, "I'm Han Solo's wife." We should have known back then that the Star Wars fandom had a potential to explode into bad areas, because that caused so many problems. I remember on Jedi Alliance, we covered it. And I remember saying, well, just wait. We got to see in the next issue. She could be not telling the truth, or there could be more to the story. And beyond that, if you didn't dig in more, you have not experienced an awesome character. And talking about the Lando series, going back to that story, you could absolutely bring Santa Staros into that story, because she's had interactions. There's a great comic issue with her and Lando. Santa Staros, or Sana, I say Santa, but man, she's a potentially really great character. So I love that. Again, just a connection. It's 200 years prior or so, but I love that. I love that Justine Ireland did that and was able to do that.
Yeah, me too. I think these generational themes in Star Wars are really important. And I feel like so far what we've heard from High Republic of, like, it makes sense that there would be some connections. I don't need everybody to be, this is how they tie back to somebody from, you know, one of the eras we know, mm-hmm. but I like there being some connection, because that is such a part of the story of Star Wars. Is, you know, the past can't be everything, but you also can't ignore it. We are still connected to the past.
Yeah. Final note of the day, Greg Pak revealed his ongoing Vader comic series, which I started to read. I got up to the part where Sabe shows up.
Ooh.
And the lockdown hit. And I finally, my comic shop is partially reopened, and I've got a stack being mailed to me. I should get it today or tomorrow, including the new Aphra stuff. So excited to catch up. Greg Pak revealed that the series as it goes on, will have connections to the rise of Skywalker, Vader. To that, it's already, like I said, Sabe's there. It's already connecting back to Phantom Menace and that kind of stuff. So I guess connections is the theme of the day, Joseph, for a lot of this stuff. Again, I know maybe you're not on up in the series yet either. Too, it's been tough to actually just get it as the comic was released this year. Vader, Rise of Skywalker, is there any wild guess you might have?
Yeah, the stuff that makes sense to me, I'm not caught up on this because I usually wait until they've been out for a little while so I can buy the collected series, and usually for a little bit of a discount there on old Comixology. But knowing that Sabe's there, I might pony up for each individual episode. And now the Rise of Skywalker connections that make sense to me is, you know, Vader had that Wayfinder at his castle, and this seems like the right era for storytelling of Palpatine saying, you know, I want to explore these other avenues of the dark side. You have a Wayfinder. Or maybe this story is more complex than that. It's like Palpatine's got, I've got my Wayfinder, and maybe Vader finds his separately. Who knows? I don't know. Ochi of Bastoon. I love Ochi of Bastoon, the design, the idea of him. I think there's some room for confusion with exactly how the knife works and when it came into his possession. So I think that whole side of it, the Wayfinder, the Ochi, the knife, I would love to see some of that in this comic.
Absolutely. And what's that character that got cut? The Webbish Bog character that is.
Oh, yeah.
and some of the cultists there on Mustafar. I'm all for it. I'm excited by what you're pitching, to the point where, again, I have to be careful, because if it goes some other direction, I'll be disappointed. But yeah, that seems the place to be in terms of connections to the Rise of Skywalker. So we'll look for it. And I'm sure if there's something juicy, our Force Center word of the month, we will dig into it here. Final quick story here. This is not a surprise, but Variety confirmed that the Star Wars movies and many other movies, including the Avatar movies for Disney, and their Fox releases, will be moved back. 2022 film was what we were expecting next for Star Wars. That slides back, and now we got releases set for December 22nd, 2023, December 19th, 2025, and December 17th, 2027. Don't do it, Joseph. Don't look ahead on the calendar and wonder how old you'll be when that happens. It will depress your Sunday afternoon, as I did when I put the story together. So, all right. Now, again, not surprise. No surprises here. But what does this do to us as fans, waiting this long or pushing it off? And also, how important is Disney Plus now, Joseph?
Oh, man. Disney Plus is extremely important. And I think it's been, you know, growing in importance. I think the other thing with Disney Plus is, like we already talked about, the live shows, you know, are going to get delayed unless something changes more significantly with the virus as well, unless... I won't get into all that. Obviously, it can be delayed. But if Disney Plus keeps developing the way it is, Disney Plus is really doing the, hey, let's play over here. Let's play over here. Maybe these things will come together. Maybe there'll be spinoffs of The Mandalorian. We've heard rumbles about that. If there is a Soloverse, you know, brewing, all these kind of possibilities. In some ways, that's exciting and I love it. But in some ways, that makes me feel even more like, maybe the movies should be a trilogy. Maybe that's what I want as a fan. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just talking about desire. Because if we get the sort of the way we've talked a lot about the way the MCU built, right? You know, it was planned, but it wasn't. And these characters had their own stories and they came together and then they became more and more interconnected. We've talked a lot about, like, maybe that would be a model for Star Wars on the big screen. But now that we're kind of getting that potentially on Disney Plus, it makes me excited to just be like, yeah, announce the Taika Waititi trilogy and just go for it.
For me, this effectively kills my hope for a Ryan Johnson trilogy. I mean, that's been, I think, on a thin line thread anyways. But what you're talking about excites me, and I don't mind them having more time to make these films, right? I'm sure some work and stuff and pre-production and art and all those kind of things have been ongoing, and some of that stuff can still go. It's just the actual, the making of that's really difficult. It makes me think, though, too, not saying it's easier. I know some friends in town I have are getting back to some sort of production, not big scale, chat shows or whatever. And one of my friends is now a COVID compliance officer for the production unit, whatever that, entails. But it made me think that, you know, it might be. I'm not an expert here. I have no medical degrees on my wall here. Star Wars figures. It could be down the line, not right now, but in early part of 2021, easier to shoot on the volume in a more controlled setting than going on location, than going to take a big movie production. You've seen what it took to make Rise of Skywalker or Last Jedi. So Disney Plus might be the home for a bit, you know, home for Star Wars. And that's okay for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just fine with that. And in some ways, like, I really miss having the experience of seeing a movie in the theater. And we've gone through the cycle now so many times with these five Disney movies of when the trailers drop and here's how long we have to talk about speculating before the next trailer and all that. It's a really fun ride. And in a way, I'm sad that we're not going to experience that for a while. But I'm also, I think it will change the conversation. You know, it was already going to be a much bigger break than normal. Now it's an even bigger break. And I think there's some things we can't even imagine of what will be the conversation. What will be the attitude to Star Wars by December 2023? How much of this sort of, you know, disagreements in the part of the Star Wars community conversation that can get, you know, kind of mean and ugly sometimes between debates about Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker and Last Jedi versus Rise of Skywalker and was Solo necessary? All those things, how much of that is just going to feel like way in the rear view mirror, and a lot of people are just excited to have a new Star Wars movie on the big screen?
Mm. Unintentional source of hope might have just sprung up there. We'll find out. We'll find out. Force Center plans to be here for all three of those movies. We'll see you in 2027, folks. Seriously, time, man, time is a thing. I remember the moment they announced that Lucasfilm had been sold, and you're looking at those dates, 2015 for a new Star Wars. That's like a lifetime. Oh, man, time moves so fast. So anyways, those dates scare me, but I'm excited for the content here.
We're to our 12th anniversary episode, getting ready for the final film in that lineup.
Welcome to the 1,000th edition of Star Wars Ranked. Here we go. All right, that is a look at the news for this week. We'll see what breaks right after we release this episode this week, and we'll talk about it next episode or the next news episode. Before we take a quick break, we want to do a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
This is one that is very recent. We're going to review it in the next couple of weeks, so you should give it a listen, too. It is Dr. Aphra by Sarah Kuhn.
Absolutely. A review forthcoming. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook or audio content. There you go. All right. We are going to take a quick break. On the other side, Jedi Temple Challenge and your questions. It's Force Center News and Cues. Stick around.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com. That's JennyLanda.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Hey, 4 Center fans, don't forget 4 Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4 Center on YouTube. Check it out. Center. It's the News and Cues show. We don't need that jingle because Tony Thaxton's more talented than me, but we're back here, Joseph, and we looked at the news. We're going to look at some cues, but Joseph, the 8th episode of Jedi Temple Challenge dropped this past week. Are you ready to swing in to the conversation?
I think I have the strength. I have the core strength to swing into the conversation. Probably not to physically do the actual swing, but to talk about it, yes.
That we could. Blue team was Julie and Daniel. Orange team, Marizel and Toulon. Love that team. Purple, Arthur and Grant. I loved Arthur and Grant as well. Speaking of swinging, man, they were swinging experts. There was a shot in the background. I think it was Grant. It was just like, I was like, that kid knows how to swing on a rope. I love it. Then he fell off the sled and that cost him the agony, but they had great perspective in one of the more competitive first rounds, Joseph.
Yeah, it was really nerve-wracking because they were really, really close and putting their all into it. I have to say I really laughed hard at the intros in like a really great way. Right at the beginning of the thing, the show, they always introduce themselves. And I think Julie and Daniel said, we're twins. And then Arthur and Grant said, we're the best. And then Mariezel and Toulon said, we're orange. We're the orange team. We're the twins team. We're the best team. We're the orange team. It's like perfect, perfect comedy timing.
I love that. It was great. That was fun. There's some great shots in this one that I love. Some shots of like the power sled from afar that just looked really good. So good job, team. That was good. This one, 8 episodes in, we can definitely confirm something, Joseph. 83 really loves potty humor. I think yeah. I'm okay with it. Are you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think sometimes a droid has to express their personality in different ways. Different droids develop different forms of etiquette. And I think this is a droid that has a sense of humor. And sometimes, yeah. Potty humor is great. And I think this droid has proven that.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm only half teasing. I think it's really funny. Mary Holland's great. I just love that this is the first time in Star Wars and, this, I count this somewhat canon, thanks to Kelly Ren Beck's presence and 83s. Man, it is things coming out the other end, including lightning, the door. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, this is weird, but I have done a long stand-up thing about lightning and butts. So I felt seen by 83. I like that very much. I like the implication that the Astromech was going to the refresher as well.
Yes, and it was a great. There was a great reaction cutaway to that too. There,
yeah.
Good stuff. I love this. Daniel and Julie brought up intelligence versus knowledge. I'm going to say intelligence, wisdom versus knowledge. That's a time honored Star Wars lesson. Dexter Jester's excited about that. Did you react to that statement at all?
Oh yeah, yeah. And it is definitely like that's the challenge of the second round there. And I thought it was great that that they called it out.
They did. Marisol got hung up on the goggles, aka binders versus the binoculars, and I absolutely sympathize. I think in a pinch, I would have done that too. Well, these look like glasses, you know, just would have grabbed them. But they lost. They got eliminated, Joseph, the Orange Team. But Toulon said, it's just so much better to have fun.
Yeah, this was a great episode for just being great sports. Because there's that other shot, too, where as soon as the second round was over, and it was pretty close, that the one kid turned to the other and like for the handshake and great game. And it's like, it's great to see the kids behaving like little Jedi.
Little Jedi, indeed. We go into the final round here, the competition. And it was blue team, Julie and Daniel. And, you know, there are either some new or they you know, switched up the games a little bit in this round here. I always enjoyed that. But the communication breakdown, I felt it. It was a hard game to kind of communicate on. And I think I would have gone the route of Daniel. I don't explain things well, Joseph. You maybe even experienced it. Well, I'm just like, it's got a thing, pointy. Squiggle, grab the squiggle, and I could see me causing this breakdown. How would you have done in this area? And what do you think about their choice to go the dark side?
Yeah, this was one of the more stressful because they, you know, there's this great Star Wars rhythm that they're twins, right? And it seemed like they were really in sync. And I thought, they're just going to breeze through this. And then there was that communication breakdown where Daniel was describing things in almost too much detail. It yeah. seemed like for Julia of like, okay, this one has three X's and a squiggle and a five thing. And then so then I got like, oh no, they're not going to make it. They're going to give in to the dark side. Yeah. And man, this quote that you have written down from that was from Daniel, right?
Daniel. Yeah.
Oh man, it was great.
Yeah. He says, going to the dark side was, quote, something a Jedi shouldn't have really done. Oh, that broke my heart.
It was great. Like, but then he followed it up with, what can I say? It was a time saver, and shrugged.
I mean, it is a game, and I don't. And they won. They got to the end. They became Jedi Knights, so it worked out. And
yeah, but I just love picturing every character we've ever loved who's fallen to the dark side. I picture Vader shrugging and saying, "It was a time saver.
It was something I shouldn't really have done." Look at me. Even just today, I'm sending text messages to my AC repairman who's coming over, and he's asking for one bit of information. Four paragraphs later, I'm like, and then it's kind of got a shade of yellow on the tag, and he's just like, just give me the specs, man. So I feel you, Daniel. I feel you, Julie. But you got there. You became Jedi Knight, and that's always fun to see. We got a couple episodes left here, Joseph. I'm going to miss this show when it's gone. It's a fun little thing to watch, and I got to tell you, what do you think about this? I'm pitching this idea. Lego Jedi Temple playset. I would like, much like, it's a big set too. Like the Bright Tree Village set or Jabba's Palace Lego playset. That's got a lot of little things you got to build up. So you got the leap and lift. You got a power sled you got to build. And you got a bunch of little minifigs. I know you're not a super big Lego collector as I am. But you'd be on board for that. You got to smash that buy button then.
Oh yeah, I want it to exist. I will purchase it and support it with money and send it to maybe some of my nieces and nephews to play with the Lego Jedi Temple playset. Yeah, absolutely. But I think I'm even more excited about your next pitch.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We got to have a video game of this. Now, yes, we got to have a very fancy PlayStation 4, Xbox kind of game there. I want kind of a retro style game going back to the old Epics Olympic Games series, which included World Games and Summer Games on the Commodore 64. Simple kind of, different phases of competition type of thing. Get to choose your team. your color, you know, blue, orange, or purple. And then you get to go through different rounds and you do it individually. So it's for time, maybe. Maybe it's a split screen if you're playing with a friend so you can try to build the hilts. I want a simpler version of this kind of video game.
Oh, that's great. I would say, you know, you got Go Video Game. But what I want more than anything is, there's all those old game shows where if you won, you'd also be sent home with the home version. And I want Yoda to say, like, Daniel, Julia, Jedi Knights you have become, and sending home with home version.
I totally forgot that. Contestants received the home game version of Wheel of Fortune, which was fun. Oh, they got to add that for season two.
Yeah.
Come on, Bromley. I know
you're...
Add that for season two, the home game version.
And I wish that we had an entirely, well, I guess, anyway, this seems like 2007, 2008, there would have been a Jedi Temple Challenge Wii Sports game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we could still make that happen.
Yeah, and I would love that.
Oh, that'd be great. Grace and I watched Knives Out again last night, and just the Frank Oz moment, just him. Now I want to hear Frank Oz recording, as you just said, Joseph, the home game version. Oh, that'd be great. Anyways, Jedi Temple Challenge. That's our look at episode 8. Congratulations to all competitors for entertaining us in such a wonderful Star Wars way. From there, Joseph, it's time for audience questions.
That is right. We take audience questions from social media and from our great patrons on Patreon. We got a couple from Twitter and a couple from Patreon. So starting with Twitter, we got a question from Gilbert Lugo. Gilbert says, when you read a Star Wars book and an alien species you're not familiar with his name, do you look it up to get the visual in mind, or do you leave it up to the books to give the little details you need to picture it yourself? This is the great kind of all in on Star Wars kind of question we can get and tackle here at Force Center. So Ken, I'm very passionate about this question. What's the answer for you?
This is why we work together as a team. In elementary school, I want people to know I received award pencils for my reading comprehension skills. All right. I want people to know that. I just sometimes I'll wait to a Star Wars Explained video or until Joseph tells me what alien it is. Some of them I know. Most of them I know. I have a habit. I just think I read kind of fast sometimes, or it's at the end of the day and I have good intentions. I'll make notes of that quote on that page for a review. But I just, as a general reader, I sometimes do have a problem of just kind of going, I'm not sure what that is. Now, again, I know most of them in Star Wars, but there have been times where I've been like later on in the book, or maybe talking with you, not necessarily on the review, but getting a note or something. I'll be like, oh yeah. Oh, that was it. Oh, that's right. It wasn't Ori Marco. Okay. Yeah. So that happens.
Yeah. So you like to, Ori Marco is a character. He's a Drazilian is a species. Yes. So I can't let that stand.
There you go.
Hass Obit is a Drazilian. So it's partially like you want to keep the flow going, right?
Yeah, that was the character, Hass Obit. I was like half a book. I didn't realize he was a Drusillian.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought he was Bob from accounting. I didn't know.
Is it that you want to keep the flow going, that you're just like, I can't stop for every verk?
Yes. This isn't just Star Wars. I sometimes have, again, this. I'm joking, but I've been a reader since I was very young and all that kind of stuff. So I love reading books. I want people to know that. I don't know why I'm defending like I'm a dummy or something. I'm very sensitive about this. I just have a habit of like, I'll read it, I'll enjoy it, and I'll wait to the end of the chapter to wrap everything up.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. That's what this chapter is about.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good, Joseph. I'm not saying it's good, but I do.
No, it's totally understandable. And I feel conflicted that way because I like to take notes for our reviews. And then I don't really feel like for our reviews, because they're already long enough. We don't need to mention every species. So I don't need to write that down for review purposes. But I do stop because I want to know. For some reason, that's one of the areas of Star Wars knowledge that I really enjoy having. I think it's because sometimes it's enriching and sometimes it's just one of those. Yeah, I just go back to, you know, being the only person in my friend group who had any idea that Greedo had a species name, and it was Rodian. And it's fun and weird and a part of the way that I enjoy Star Wars. So I like knowing them. So it gives me a little burst of joy every time something comes up and like, oh, I know that's Coleman Trebor's species. Like, it makes me happy. But so then when one comes up that I don't know, I don't even wait for the book to try to explain it to me. I look it up. and I think that can be, it can slow you down and that can be frustrating, but it can be really rewarding in terms of getting insights on the author, because sometimes I've been like, oh man, I don't know that species, so I'll look it up. And like when we're reading Shadowfall, this Alphabet Squadron second book, there were a couple species where I looked them up and like, oh, there's not even an image of that because it's just from Expanded Universe. I didn't realize Alexander Freed was a big Expanded Universe guy, and that's informing the choices he's making about what aliens he's putting in. And I got a little insight into the author.
That's great. That's why you and I make a good team. I don't know what I bring to it, but you bring that, and that's why I'm looking at these are fine.
You bring your pencils for reading comprehension.
No joke. I just got rid of them.
Why?
I found them in storage. I think I kept some of them. And this was my recently, I'm going to dump stuff in a fire pit and burn it and purge parts of my life because I'm holding on to junk for no reason. I found my pencil awards from Margaret Harlow Elementary School. So there you go. Good attendance was in there too.
We'll dive into that into our upcoming show. That's not Star Wars counseling, just plain old counseling where Ken and I counsel one another on why we make choices. We're going to move along. Great question, Gilbert. Love the species in the books, and I'm delighted when I know them. Look them up when I don't. There's our answer. So we're going to move on to Ben Cossie, I believe. Ben says, in episode 3, Palpatine says the Sith will rule and create peace. How much do you think this was true? Was it to manipulate Anakin, or does he think his evil way will create peace? Does he even want peace? Do you think when he became Chancellor, that was once his goal and greed changed it? Ooh, this is a juicy Palpatine question. I'm sure Palpatine says the word juicy, and I'm sure it's disturbing. Ken, what are your thoughts on this juicy Palpatine question?
I think if he wanted true peace early on, he was 5. I think this is his piece. I think he does use it to manipulate not just Anakin, but everyone. That's what he's selling, safe and secure society.
Mm-hmm.
Hear that? And to me, a great example is Rey Sloane, who on her planet growing up, bad things going on, the Empire comes in, cleans it up. And from her point of view and her personal experience, it was a safer and secure society because of the Empire. So she joins up and then starts to discover that her version of the Empire wasn't the one that maybe existed. And there goes some of the wonderful wrinkles into her story and her character. I think it is true. It's true from his point of view. And then along the way, he does want peace, peace on his terms. And what that means, he's very peaceful in his office, just thinking of evil things to do and staring at his art. He's got peace all the way through it. And it's fueled by his hate. So that's my thought, Ben.
Those are all great thoughts, and I agree. I think that Palpatine fell sometime in his youth. I know we got the Darth Plagueis novel, which is not entirely canon at the moment. Bits and pieces have been grabbed up here. But just in general, not to be pedantic about the canon, I feel like that makes sense to me as the truth of the character, that something happened to him in his youth where he fell and he never looked back, on like some of our other conflicted darksiders. So I don't think he ever meant anything but exactly what you're saying. His point of view, peace to him, which I think is an interesting wrinkle. But I think a part of why I love both the safe and secure society and the way he says that to Anakin in particular in the office of once more the Sith shall rule the galaxy and we shall have peace. There's even that contrast in the way he's saying it. You know, there's the kind of the violence and the excitement of the Sith or have their revenge and this will lead to peace. But it's just such he's offering that lie to Anakin. And I think it is absolutely one of Lucas's point of peace and order and security is the lie of authoritarianism, I think, is Lucas's point. And it's extra powerful because it is a lie that he can offer the whole world-weary galaxy of, like, these separatists have been in this war, been causing all of this violence and chaos. But if it's just an empire and you just give up a little bit of your freedom and just let me run everything, then you'll have peace. But it's even more specific lie to Anakin, where Anakin wants to save Padme, but he's also been working so hard for years to end the war. And he's handing this convenient lie to Anakin of like, look, the dark side is just another way to look at the Force. It's just a part of the puzzle, just a part of the mystery. You just need to, you know, learn about that, defeat these Jedi who are going to kill us anyway, right? So it's really kind of defense. And then you'll be able to end the war. You'll have peace, and you and Padme can be married. He's offering all sorts of things that he knows are a lie.
Yeah.
And they're directly things that Anakin wants. He's basically saying, here are lies that you can tell yourself, so when you feel horrible guilt about the awful things you're about to do, you can cling to this specific lie.
Hold on tight.
Yeah, hold on to this lie. And then the thing that you're saying about his point of view, I really like, and I think is super juicy, because, yeah, he's this controlling figure, and it's his version of peace, because he has all the power now. But the nature of being Sith, the nature of being dark side, you need anger, you need conflict. And I think that Palpatine and the dark side and Sidious thrive on the resistance from the galaxy. And if he were able to totally pacify the galaxy, he'd find another way to create conflict, because the nature of the dark side is not peace. The nature of the dark side is conflict.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And he needs to keep pointing to those examples of those dastardly rebels threatening your safe and secure society.
Yeah. He needs the others to say, look at, this is why the Jedi are the problem. Those rebels are the problem. Not me, the wrinkled guy in a dark cloak who shoots lightning out of his fingers. I'm not the problem.
I'm not the problem. It's the people on Lothal stealing fruit.
It is. It's the Jogan. It's not Jogan fruit. It's the fruit in Jedi Temple Challenge. That fruit. They say it every week on Jedi Temple Challenge.
We're going to have to look it up.
I'm ashamed, Ken, that I forgot a Star Wars fruit name. But I'll remember it next week. We're going to move on to questions from patrons on Patreon. We got this one from Brendan Safinski. That's my best run at the last name. Apologize if I got it wrong. Brendan has some great thoughts. This is a little bit of an essay form question. So here we go. You ready, Ken?
I am, sir.
Having rewatched The Rise of Skywalker a few times now, it occurred to me the sequel trilogy is very much about legacy and what you want your legacy to be. Each character plays a direct role in the development of the sequel's main characters. Some think their glory days were back during the rebellion. Han and Luke both go astray, thinking they're doing more harm than good, straying around, but realize they are still needed to light the way for this next generation of heroes. Leia's teachings are present throughout the sequel trilogy. This theme is then driven home in The Rise of Skywalker with lines like, "What our mothers and fathers fought for, we will not let die," which gets me misty every time I hear it, says Brendan, and I agree. Pretty much the entire scene between Poe and Lando, and so much more. Palpatine's entire plan is about preserving his legacy. With this in mind, you guys speak often about the recurring themes of Star Wars, but is there a distinct theme or message that you find applies to the story of each trilogy? So, Ken, do you have general reaction to Brendan's thoughts on legacy? And then let's talk about what we think each trilogy means.
No, I think Brendan's right on with a lot of that stuff in there. I think that's the part of the journey of Rise of Skywalker is the many areas it touches upon. And you and I have talked about, you know, your past and overcoming your past or overcoming what you think, but just a little bit what he touched upon there. And that glory days coming. I love the moment of Lando being like, my flying days are done because of reasons that are probably made up in my head. So I think that's important. Yeah. Generally, I think you're onto something in each movie. They're all kind of similar in a way. They're all part of the larger tapestry of themes in Star Wars. So a lot of them to me sometimes are similar, but to break it down movie by movie, we might need an episode, but definitely have some thoughts.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was getting distracted because I remembered it's a Maelorrhan fruit, right?
There you go. That's the one. Maelorrhan.
Now I'm back to our deep themes. Yeah, no, I think Brendan summarizes a lot of these ideas of legacy that are just everywhere in the sequel trilogy. And, you know, we always have lots of discussions, what I think are really valid for different fans about, you know, how much nostalgia is stopping the sequel trilogy from telling a new story or having new ship designs and all that. But at the same time, for me, that's always a little bit like, yeah, but the point is dealing with legacy. The point is wrestling with the past and moving forward. So that's, it for me, some of the nostalgia of the sequel trilogy is not a bug. It's a feature. It's what is it's meant to be. So I totally agree with that. In terms of the other trilogies, we could definitely have a big, long, juicy episode about that. But I got some thoughts. Are you ready?
Yeah, no, let's dive on in. And I know Brendan just kind of asked specifically to the trilogy, not necessarily each individual movie, too. So happy to discuss that. Yeah, please.
Yeah. I think for prequels, to me, it really is about this general idea of corruption and how both individually good people and good, well-intentioned systems fall to the dark side. I mean, it certainly is about Palpatine Sidious's manipulations, but I think it's some of our, I think, ever-growing appreciation on Force Center of the Phantom Menace, of all of this picture of Anakin as a innocent kid who really means well, and of Shmi who's given him all this great wisdom, that's all there in Phantom Menace, because then we see the tragedy of that being lost, you know. So it's not just Anakin's fall to Vader, it's the Galactic Republic's fall, it is the Jedi Order's fall. So much of it about it, the prequels to me, is about a fall. It's about corruption, it's about lost, being good and but still losing your way. Do you feel about that, Ken?
Yeah, no, right there with you. Especially lately we've been focusing on the Jedi Order, and we talk about justice for the Jedi. Part of that is really acknowledging that, yeah, they were defeated on the surface by the Sith or Palpatine, and eventually Vader and Order 66, and that's the house. But we love those wise, and it came, the call came from inside. The problem was inside, and that seems, but also it doesn't tear down the Jedi Order as this bad thing. Just as like, here's how it could go bad. Here's how the original tensions can be lost, and here's how all of that leads to destruction. Attachment, of course, big theme because of what it means to Anakin time and time again. I just, in watching the Clone Wars movie, you know, we're going to review that on Friday, but just that moment so clear with Yoda being like, yeah, no, we, Anakin needs a Padawan because he needs to learn how to let go. Really important things there too. So I'll throw that in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the original trilogy is fascinating because it, in some ways, it is absolutely telling its own story. It's also like, it is the template of Star Wars. It is telling the story of Star Wars. So you kind of, as the original part of the storytelling, so you kind of look at some of it of just like, this is really just establishing all of the themes and ideas that might spiral out from this galaxy far, far away. But then when you really look at it in context of the three trilogies, to me, it is about, I would say, redemption and really just becoming the best you, to put it in motivational poster terms. Because it's not just that Vader returns to being Anakin, that he is, you know, potentially one of the Jedi who is returning in Return of the Jedi. But then you look at what all of the individual characters, the main characters, are facing, too, of Luke has to overcome his impatience and his anger and his fear to become the very best version of himself. That's Han's entire journey is, you know, I've got this good person buried inside of me under these scars that make me a scoundrel. Can I get past them? Leia kind of makes herself more whole by saying she's a steadfast character who knows what is right and is really strong. But there's this part of herself that she hasn't allowed to open up, which is her emotions and her connection and her kind of allowing herself to be this full person. And she accomplishes that by entering this relationship with Han and truly bonding with her brother. We talked about Lando in this episode. There's another person who becomes the best version of themselves. So it's not just Anakin. I feel like everyone in the original trilogy is ultimately rising to the challenge of being as good as they can possibly be.
Yeah, that is pretty inspiring too. When you go back and even look at it with those eyes, and telling the story. And I think, again, we talk about the era 70s into 80s, particularly the 80s, we focus a lot on Jedi and this idea that, you know, how you fight and how you win is important. And talking about Luke throwing down his blade is essentially, in general, how he defeats Palpatine, right? Or how he saves his father who defeats Palpatine. Also, I focus on the idea of compassion and connecting with those around you and seeing them as an equal. I go to Leia handing Wicket a snack. This fun, silly, cute moment is all about her compassion and seeing the Ewok, seeing Wicket as he is, a creature that's fully functional, and not seeing the Ewoks as the Empire did. And because at that point, it's the same, right? Your helmet scares me. Your poncho scares me. You're probably just the same. And that little act of compassion changes everything. And that leads to a military victory, a little bit different than Luke's, but same kind of thing. Compassion being a big part of Jedi specifically.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the things that really, really makes me just love the prequels because of the way they talk about the original trilogy. And I'm glad you brought that up, that the prequels are this fear of the danger of attachment. And there's so much in the original trilogy that is the reminder of like, no, attachment is our greatest strength. And then for sequel trilogy, I think for myself, I totally agree with Brendan about this idea of legacy. But I think the younger generation is dealing with living in the shadow of the previous generation. And through that, I think it really becomes a story about defining your own destiny, of being affected by the past, but really getting to choose who you are. It's, you know, one of the reasons that I love the choice in Rise of Skywalker to have both Poe and Finn confronted by shadows of their own recent past, the same way Rey is confronted by this truth of her lineage, so that they all can really wrestle with making the decision of who they want to be and how they want to incorporate the legacies that they found themselves literally growing up in.
Yeah. The shadow of the legacy is definitely a big part of it. Cause again, it goes in as even Brendan touched upon, goes to the older characters as well. That shadow can be absolutely crushing as you saw with Han and Luke, particularly Luke. So absolutely. I'll second the shadow of the legacy and then the destiny to choose. We talked how many times now have we brought up that destiny brings you to that point of choice? That's big in all of Star Wars, but it seems really important in the sequels.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a great, great thought starter and conversation starter, Brendan. And the last thing I'll have to say is I do feel like the whole Skywalker saga is about a lot more than Anakin, Vader. But I also do like that for my own interpretation, Anakin Vader goes through this arc that then kind of a lot of characters move through with him. If the prequels is his fall and a lot of things fall, the original trilogy is his return and a lot of people choosing to be them best selves. And then the sequel is so much about, well, all of these events happened and they don't just stay in the past. So it's kind of, you know, that Vader helmet is a lot of the sequel trilogy, just in that one image of just because you became better and you're gone doesn't mean that what happened before doesn't continue to ripple out into the future.
There you go. Good thought starter, Brendan.
Yeah. So we can move on to our final question from Jeremy Klein. Jeremy says, my current Star Wars project is rewatching the movies in chronological order and reading the corresponding novelizations, although I cheated and started with The Rise of Skywalker first, since that one was so hotly anticipated. Having never read the novelizations before, it has been an interesting experience, as there are some parts of them I really enjoy and other parts that don't line up with my view and understanding of the characters in the movies. So my question is, have you read any, all the novelizations? And if so, which ones did you like the most and why? Were there any that just flat out didn't work for you? Thanks and keep up the great work. Thank you, Jeremy, for the great question. Yeah. Ken, novelizations, how you feeling?
Oh, I love them. I've read all of the movie ones. I'll tell you what, I got to find my Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. They're somewhere in some box someplace. But I just recently reread The Phantom Menace novelization and loved it. Just some great stuff, some good insights, some extra stuff with Anakin that I thought was just it was, I don't know, just it's just a lot of cool little Annie stuff. So check that out. Recently completed, well, recently, probably a couple of years ago now, on Spotlight Star Wars, I kind of did a poke through, not a full read through, but a poke through of the original novelizations for the original trilogy. And there's some great stuff. My favorite, I mention a lot, is just like, you just forget. You focus on, I don't know, the Return of the Jedi novel where Owen Lars was Obi-Wan's brother, and there's the mention of the molten lava and Vader falling in and all exciting things. That's the Mon Mothma, the description of who she is and what's going on, the rebellion. You read that, it's from 1983, and you're like, oh, everything in Star Wars Rebels, everything in Rogue One, everything in Solo, everything we're learning now, all comes from that. It's like two pages. The whole story of the rebellion. And you're like, wow, that's funny. I didn't focus on that as a kid. I didn't read on the fractured cells, Mothma having to be kind of put forward as a leader, and she's a senator on the run. All those, it's all there, and it's really insightful and a great reveal. So I love all of them. The ones that, as far as moments and everything, other than just little canon things, I'm trying to think. It's been a while since the Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. I want to dig back into those ones. And the Force Awakens novelization was fine. It didn't offer a tremendous additional amount of insight that I want from the novelizations. I do want that, and I didn't get that as much for that one.
Yeah, yeah, and they've really moved into that that direction of really, in fact, having it be a part of the advertising, right? They're expanded editions, and you're going to get some little scenes and insights that were not in the movie kind of thing. Yeah, I've read all of them. I started the Force Awakens novelization and didn't make it through. I think there's, for me, there was a hard contrast between the Force Awakens felt very fresh and new and exciting to me. I get some of the criticisms about, you know, too much nostalgia, but the contrast between that and just the style of prose from an older writer felt a little clunky. And especially, I think we were really beginning our, you know, canon journey with new books, and there was little details early on that the movie and the book disagreed, and I felt like I want to stay in the world of the canon, so I'll go back and finish that Force Awakens novelization someday. But besides that, I have read them all. The original trilogy ones are the most interesting in some ways because they are a snapshot of a different time. The only thing that ever just like didn't work for me, the Solo novelization had a take that Kira was not aware that Maul was in charge of Crimson Dawn. And that's a thing for me of like, well, maybe that'll become like super canon, whatever. But in my head canon, the way I watch Solo, it feels like she knows something that Han really doesn't. And that feels like that's what it is. Like when I watch that movie, I feel like she knows who she's calling, you know?
Yeah.
To me. So a little thing I disagree with. But then, I really want to do a reread of the original trilogy novelizations. This is a weird Star Wars memory that I don't think I've ever shared. There was a summer when I was still in high school that I worked at a bank as a temp downtown, and my job was mostly to stamp why checks bounced. It was a very depressing job. There was one check that I had to stamp for NSF for insufficient funds, and the person had literally written on the check, only 50 cents. It's very, very depressing job. So every day I'd go down to downtown Minneapolis a little bit early, and there's a place called Baxter's Books. I don't know why I started doing this because I didn't have a copy, and I read the A New Hope novelization. Every morning, I'd read a chapter before work, just crouched over in the bookstore.
Yeah, nice.
And read the whole book that way. And the thing that I got a new copy recently, in that prologue, there's some minor differences from what eventually happens, but that just totally lays out a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about today, about Palpatine and about the story of Star Wars from Lucas's perspective. I know that book was ghostwritten, but still, it's coming from Lucas. The story of Star Wars is about a government that failed from the inside. And that's always been the story. And that's powerful to see that, hey, the prologue of Star Wars, a novelization that came out, I believe, before the film even, already had the prequel story in the first pages. It's a great thing to revisit.
Yeah. And I've talked often how it's taken from the Journal of the Wills. And I spent most of my childhood going through used bookstores in my hometown looking for the Journal of the Wills, a Star Wars book that had to exist, Mom, because it says it right here.
I know. Can we just go to enough used bookstores to find it?
There you go.
There got to be more Adventures of Luke Skywalker somewhere in this used bookstore.
Somewhere.
Yeah. So those are questions, all great ones. Jeremy, Brendan, Ben, Gilbert, thank you so much for the questions and much more to come.
Absolutely. We got a big show coming up for you all on Thursday. We're looking at masks in Star Wars. We have the Clone Wars report on Friday. We're rewatching it in chronological order. And now we have reached, well, our second episode, we've reached the movie. It's going to be a fun adventure. So look for that. If you want to join the conversation or follow us on Twitter, go to Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. Like us on Facebook. Follow on Instagram. Subscribe on YouTube. Podcast available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We have merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us at patreon.com/Force Center. We love new Patreons. We're making new plans. Always have new things coming, and we announce a lot of it through Patreon. And we have our own things we got going on. You can follow me at Ked Knapsack. As long as there's a baseball season, well, even if there's not a baseball season, I'll be talking about baseball on Boxcore Heroes, but it might be a short ride for up-to-date new information. We'll see about that. You can follow me there at Boxcore Heroes or go to kedknapsack.com. We are doing our personal charity spotlights here, and I am choosing Be the Match this week. BeTheMatch.org is the National Bone Marrow Donor Program, which I am a part of. And it is a simple thing, but it could be a potential life-saving thing. I got the call once, and it didn't go as far as one would hope. Situation changed during the process. I started to go over to the City of Hope here outside Pasadena, and it's pretty touching and awe-inspiring once you get involved and you feel both humble and important, and it's a good feeling, but it's like, gosh, more should do this. So I'm really highly recommending you all check out BeTheMatch.org. Joseph, what do you have?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw and check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for other podcasts and comedy adventures. And the thing I'm highlighting today is Vote Forward. Their website is votefwd.org. And this is a site where you add some personalizations to letters to just encourage people to use their power and vote here in America. It is something that I am doing and feel good about engaging with the process, and encourage others to check that out and see if it is for you.
Do it, do it, do it. We are out of here. Thank you for your cues to supplement our news. We'll see you next time on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.